In offices from Manhattan to Mountain View, they're picking up the scattered pieces of the Google book settlement. But like Humpty Dumpty in the old rhyme, can the Authors Guild, AAP, and Google ever put the settlement back together again? Hello and welcome to CCC's podcast series Beyond the Book. My name is Christopher Keneally, and today we preview a free webcast from Digital Book World and Publishers Weekly coming next Tuesday, May 10th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, that asks the question, what comes after the Google book settlement? With more such questions and possibly even a few early answers, Andrew Albanese of Publishers Weekly joins me from New York City, and welcome to Beyond the Book, Andrew.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be with you again.
Well, we always enjoy chatting with you, and this Google book settlement case has been your baby from at least 2008, possibly earlier. The case, of course, filed in 2005. Here we are in 2011, and after all that time, what have we got?
We have a dead settlement. I think we need to get away from some of the language that I've seen in the press so far, where we're talking about whether or not the parties can revise the settlement. The settlement, the sweeping settlement as we've known it so far, is now gone. What we're talking about now is what comes next. If the parties can come together and craft a new settlement, what that settlement will cover, or do we go back to litigation?
Well, that's what you're going to be talking with some really very interesting people about here on this webinar next Tuesday. Tell us about your guests and what are the kinds of questions you're going to be asking them?
Well, my guests will be University of California, Berkeley, legal scholar Pam Samuelson. Pam, I think, has been probably the most significant copyright scholar writing and thinking about the Google book settlement, and she's just written an outstanding article about how feasible legislatively some of the solutions that were envisioned in the Google settlement may be.
That's an important point, because one of the things that Judge Chin said was, my courtroom isn't the right place to solve these questions, and he expressly said Congress is the place to do it.
And that's not terribly encouraging for a lot of us, especially, you know, not only given the way Congress has acted in general politically in recent years, but when it comes to copyright especially, it's been difficult for Congress to come to any kind of meaningful solution. And I think this is true whether it's orphan works legislation, which failed in 2008, or when it comes to a working group that was put together by the Copyright Office and the Library of Congress to talk about expanding Section 108 privileges for preservation for libraries. That group yielded very little consensus. So it's hard to imagine some of the great vision that was put forth in the Google settlement actually being accomplished by Congress.
But you say that Professor Samuelson has given some thought to all of this. Give us some high-level points that she makes.
She makes, I think she does raise the issue of the Section 108 study group and how difficult it would be to carve out some of these privileges, whether it be for libraries or for other groups to make use of digital objects. I think that she raises the issue of orphan works quite well, and then how difficult that's going to be. And these are really two of the key things in the Google settlement.
Right, and for our audience, some of the terminology is familiar to many, but not to everyone. So we'll say that orphan works are that category of works. They could be text many times. They're more than that. They've got photos in it or audio recordings, even film, where the owner, the copyright owner, cannot be found. And the way things work today, if you don't know who the copyright owner is, you don't have permission to use that.
That's right. It's a large class of works. We don't have an exact number, but it's you know, said to be in the millions.
Right. You also have joining you someone a little closer to your hometown, New York City. He's the professor of law there at the New York Law School, James Grimmelman. He's also been very strong voice for this whole thing.
James has been an outstanding resource on the settlement and really has sort of picked up the ball and run with it since the settlement began. In fact, since Google's book skinning began. James has provided excellent legal analysis, and with his students at the New York Law School, he has chartered the Public Index, which has really sort of offered a chance for public interaction with some of the terms of the settlement. As you know, the settlement was crafted in a, you know, between and among major corporations, the public really didn't have much of a voice there. So James and his students have worked hard to offer an outlet for people, for the public, to have their voice heard on this.
Right. And although that's true that the settlement was carved behind closed doors, once it was out there and presented to the world in the fall of 2008, a lot of people did comment on it. And it seems as if it made an impact that the judge heard what people had to say.
The judge absolutely heard what people had to say. In fact, unfortunately for the settlement, the judge heard from a lot of people who were against it. And it's interesting. We'll talk a little bit more about this with the panel. You know, if we were talking about some of the things in the Google settlement as legislation, as policy, if they had brought everybody together and put forth some policy recommendations along these lines, I think it would have garnered more support. But most of the objectors, and there were a significant number of them, most of the people who did comment on the suit were negative. And I think one of the reasons they were negative is because they were not given a chance to voice their concerns in the negotiations. And this is what happens in lawsuits. They're private negotiations.
Right. And, you know, the affected people here aren't just the parties. The parties, of course, being at a very high level, the Authors Guild, the Association of American Publishers, and Google itself. But the other parties, some of them you follow very closely, the libraries, for example, and you're going to be trying to raise the issues that librarians care about.
Yeah, the library issue is a really interesting issue to me. It's notable in the library brief that was written by Jonathan Band that libraries decided to neither oppose nor really endorse the settlement. They were key, and there would be no Google settlement without libraries. These are the people who kept and curated all of these collections long after publishers had lost them or given up on them. And publishers were enormously excited about the net access and the real positive things that they were going to get out of this deal. Yet at the same time, the settlement raised some real questions going forward, especially given changes in the way digital information is bought and consumed and used, about how libraries were going to fit into the future post-Google settlement.
Right, and the settlement really was a visionary document. It went on for 400 pages, and it imagined a new world, a then unformed world in 2008 of electronic books, and there was this organization it was to sort of be the father and mother of, which was the Book Rights Registry. Any sense right now of where the Book Rights Registry stands? If there is no settlement, is there a Book Rights Registry?
There is no Book Rights Registry without a settlement. The Book Rights Registry was created by the settlement. Now, that's not to say there won't be a Book Rights settlement going forward, and I, for one, think it would be incredibly useful. And Michael Healy is now in charge of the Book Rights Registry. He's terrific, and I know he would do a fabulous job putting together something that would be very useful. But right now, it does not exist.
Right, because the funding was going to come from the settlement itself.
That's right.
And if something like that should be formed, it would have to be formed by the parties or by others.
Or, you know, alternatively, it could be formed by Congress. This seems like this is something that copyright law, you know, should be able to handle, especially in the digital age. We should be able to have clarity about rights and who owns rights and where rights exist. But as you know, there's been no formality with copyright registration, that you're not required to log your rights anywhere. So it's very difficult for people to know who owns which rights and which rights are available.
Right. Well, we're talking with Andrew Albanese, features editor at Publishers Weekly, about a program he'll be moderating next Tuesday, May 10th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. It's a free webinar. We'll have the information on our website at beyondthebook.com. Tell you how you can register. It's presented by Digital Book World and Publishers Weekly. And Andrew, you have a third guest, somebody I know fairly well. I bump into him in the lunchroom all the time, and that's Scott Klebe. He's a colleague of mine here at Copyright Clearance Center. We just did a podcast with him about a presentation he's going to be doing at Book Expo called The Arc of Publishing, which looks at the historical development of the ebook and the implications for authors and publishers. Why talk to Scott?
Because this is all about rights, and Scott has a tremendous perspective on what rights mean and where we are sort of in, I don't want to call, he sort of frame them as technology wars, so to speak. And I guess that's actually a very apt term, so I'll use it. Yeah, where we are in the technology wars. As you know, from 2005 when Google began, actually 2004 when Google began its scanning program, to 2011 with the growth of ebooks, we're in a fundamentally different place. And the real questions that I have are whether or not the settlement, in fact, matters to most publishers as they go forward.
Well, I think that's the most fascinating part of all of this, that in 2008 when the announcement was made, there was no ebook market. Today, you know the numbers better than I do, but they're growing very quickly, approaching something like 10% of book sales are ebook sales. So something that was only a dream 3 years ago is a reality today. And I think you're right. It does kind of ask the question for us: why do we need such a thing?
Exactly right. And we do need such a thing, because the danger that we face going forward is that we're going to lose all of these print books that weren't digitized, that haven't been digitized, that are sitting moldering on library shelves. How do we carry them forward to the digital age? That's a key question for our culture, for the whole literary ecosystem. At the same time, publishers, when it comes to current frontlist books, have found their digital solution, it seems. That digital solution is, of course, not perfect. But the absolute loss of control that they feared with Google scanning books no longer seems to be that terribly big of an issue to a lot of the major publishers.
Right, and that sense of control has always been very important for both publishers and, let's be fair, to authors as well. They're the copyright holders, and they'd like to make some decisions about this rather than the court or Google.
Yeah.
Well, Andrew, let me just ask you about some of the technical points here, and you'll be covering these, I think, extensively in your program, but there is a legal next step. There's going to be what's called a status conference coming up in early June. What do we expect to happen then?
I don't expect much to happen at the June 1 conference, but I could be wrong. I've been wrong before, not frequently, but I don't expect much. I think the status conference is more or less a chance for the parties to tell the judge, to update the judge on where they are, and at least to give the judge a sense of whether or not they're making progress towards a new settlement or a new solution. I don't expect that any surprises will be raised at the status conference. However, the status conference was postponed once, and maybe that's because the parties have been making progress on an agreement, and maybe they're planning to tell the judge that they're close. But by and large, it's just an opportunity for the parties to inform the judge of where they stand.
Well, we'll all be waiting to hear what they have to say, but more importantly, we'll be waiting to hear what you and your guests, Pam Samuelson, James Grimmelman, and CCC's own Scott Klebe have to say next Tuesday, May 10th at 1 p.m., a webinar sponsored by Digital Book World and Publishers Weekly called What Comes After the Google Book Settlement. And Andrew, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. We'll look forward to be listening Tuesday afternoon, and really appreciate you joining us today on Beyond the Book.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to our free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, copyright.com/Beyond the Book. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening.